From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Radio Times. I'm Kevin McCrory in for Marty Moskowain. It didn't always used to be this way. What we know as the 5-day, 40-hour work week is a product of union strikes, management innovation, and federal legislation. For much of the 19th century, a 6-day work week with longer hours was common. Things changed with the times, and some are saying we've reached another tipping point. But could the 4-day work week really become a reality? As is, we know many of us work much more than 40 hours a week, and the idea of capping at 32 can feel like a fantasy. But much of Iceland is already doing it, Spain and Scotland are trying it, and even some U.S. companies are wading in. Proponents say it reduces wasted time on the job and increases efficiency and happiness among employees. Detractors see it as a pipe dream that will undercut output and drive up labor costs. It's been a debate for decades, but now, with the pandemic causing many of us to rethink work, it's gathering steam as a more legitimate question. So in this hour of Radio Times, we get into it with two guests. Lonnie Golden is the professor of economics at Penn State Abington and a research associate at the Economic Policy Institute. He specializes in worker well-being and flexibility in the workplace. Welcome, Lonnie.
Great to be here with you, Kev.
And we have Ashley Williams, a professor at Harvard Business School, who studies the intersection of time, money, happiness, and public policy. Great to have you here, Ashley.
Likewise. Thanks for having me.
So, Lonnie, I'll start with you. What do you think it is about this moment that's making this conversation click for people right now? It really seems like the pandemic is just throwing the old rules out the window.
Yeah, I think that we took for granted there was this standard work week as something given from nature or more. And it turns out it's really just a historical choice to do a 5-day-a-week work with a standard of 8 hours a day, which was set almost 100 years ago when jobs were mostly hourly paid, you know, hard start, hard end times. And the world has changed since then, and jobs and their structures have changed since then. But what hasn't changed is the human factors and human beings, and it's time to rethink what is sustainable for workers in terms of how long they should work, or which becomes excessive or too long, or insufficient. On the other hand, so if we have this shock now through the pandemic to rethink what a standard work week ought to be, or how much we should devote our time to work and income earning. Maybe there's an opportunity now to change laws, to set norms or standards, and the window might close on that. So it's great to have this discussion.
And Ashley, I mean, so much of this has kind of changed because of the relationship to our jobs, especially with technology and our smartphones and email prevalence and Slack prevalence. Really, the work week has already gone haywire, even without, I guess, formally acknowledging it, right?
Yeah, exactly. So as we were talking just before this segment, there was this opportunity during the pandemic when so many workers went remote and we were in this forced experiment of virtual work to have more time available because we're not commuting to the office or not traveling on business. And yet the best data suggests that what we've experienced is a perfect example of Parkinson's law. Work has expanded to fill the additional time we've given it. People are having more meetings in a virtual environment. They're sending more emails. They're working outside of normal office hours to a greater extent. So digital distraction has never been greater. And that's creating a lot of stress and burnout and unhappiness for employees who've been juggling virtual work and changing models of work with personal demands and all of the challenges of managing work and life simultaneously while working and living in the same physical space. So it's no wonder, given that we are sort of in this liminal moment, this transition period, that workers are demanding that organizations start to reconsider the way work gets done more permanently. And so the 4-day work week is definitely part of this conversation about how can we rethink, reimagine what work is, what it means to be an employee, and our relationship with work in relation to our lives.
So let's talk a little bit about how it could work in practice. You know, proponents of the idea kind of pitch it as a way to help both white collar workers who are expected to work around the clock, as well as lower level service workers in jobs that might need more dependable hours and maybe, you know, this idea could somehow get them more security and stability. As one proponent put it, the goal is one reasonable job per person, not two for one person and a half for another person. But I'm just curious, like, won't this end up costing employers a lot of money? Like, if you have 10 people now who are working 60-hour weeks and you cut their hours in half, but you keep their salaries the same, then you have to hire another 10 people at the same rate. Like, how does it work? Lonnie, I'll put that to you.
Well, some companies, as you suggest, have been doing that already, or some companies in certain countries have been doing that, are forced to do it if there's a shorter standard. But I think it it speaks to what employers would have to do, like when they're shocked, as they did, you know, with the pandemic. How do we rearrange work? How do we set up a work week when we don't know what the future will be? And I guess there's been this sort of solidification of, you know, open-ended work, particularly at the end of the day or through the evenings and through the weekends. And now we are rethinking that. So I think there will be some cost of adjustment. There's no free lunch. And that some firms that are used to having these extended hours would have to scale back. And what we're thinking, based on some of the research on case studies or the countries, like you suggest in the opening, that have done this, that firms find a way through this. And one of the potential downsides, as you suggest, is that work might become a little more intensified or a little more sped up. But as Ashley said at the beginning, maybe it just gets rid of some downtime. It gets rid of some unnecessary socializing time. It gets rid of, obviously, if it's remote, the commuting time and the parking time. And so on balance, in the end, maybe it won't reduce the productivity too much.
And Ashley, I mean, is there any getting around the idea that, like, if you're making this pitch to the Chamber of Commerce, you're saying it's going to end up costing employers more money?
I think we have to also take into consideration losing valuable employees costs organizations a lot of money too, right? So we need to not only be talking in this conversation about the money that we might have to spend to bring new hires on board, but really what we're the money that we're going to lose if we don't start taking flexibility seriously. We've already seen in the economy challenges with staffing certain jobs. I think when I'm talking to students at HBS who are thinking about where they want to work or considering staying or leaving their jobs, we really see flexibility and the opportunity to work less, to have pursuits outside of the workplace, being a key point of consideration. And so we need to not lose sight of the fact that losing top talent costs tons of money every year. And so we might actually end up kind of netting out some of our costs of hiring additional staff by not losing some of the best people that we have in an organization. So it's not enough just to think about the hard costs we might have to pay as a company to hire a few more people. We also need to be thinking about the cost of retention if we don't start rethinking the way that work is getting done. And then another point here is just that I think it's really, you know, important, and we've seen in some of these case studies that companies do really try to be efficient and distribute work more equally in different, as you were saying, Kevin, in across these different business units. So there's been successful examples where workers have actually come together and formed committees to make the four-day work week possible. And through these conversations with employees have found efficiency gains that don't necessitate hiring more staff, but really just reallocating people, forming subcommittees where one group will focus more on short-term sales, another group will focus more on long-term sales, instead of one person trying to do both jobs simultaneously, which has cost switching associated with it. So I think that it's not a necessary requirement to hire a bunch more staff if we start to also have concerted conversations about being more efficient with the staff that we do have and making the work more manageable.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether we kind of choose to get to the four-day work week as an employer by hiring a bunch more people.
Hmm. Let's drill down a bit into the Iceland example. It seems like that's the most robust kind of research that we have on this. And as I understand it, it started really as unions lobbying for it a decade ago, and Reykjavik piloted a four-day work week program where no one's salary was reduced, and then it spread to the rest of the country. And kind of the headline results on the study that was done of what's occurred there over the past few years is no decline in services, but increases in worker happiness and well-being and decreases in stress. Lonnie, like, how is this not too good to be true? Can you tell us more about what happened there?
Well, to be totally honest about it, they did not necessarily eliminate one day per week. It shortened mm-hmm. one day per week or worked within a 35 or 36 hour standard. And that might be a reasonable target. But it's not that surprising because, as Ashley mentioned, it's the cost of not doing something. So the cost of keeping excessive hours, unauthorized businesses, sickness, tardiness, you know, pre-COVID and post-COVID, and break times, and the slowdown in productivity you get when you're working 5-6 consecutive days in a row. So there's a long research literature about how, at least in certain industries, if there's more time for recovery and recuperation and rest, that people come back more efficient and per hour. So I think what some of the Northern European countries and Western European countries have done by shortening their standard, at least a little bit, or at least entertaining the discussion for certain workers in the labor force, has been to reframe the issue as productivity per hour. And the U.S. a dominant view is that, you know, more work is more productive. And so their view is more work eventually becomes less productive. So if you get, like, some people who are currently on a four-day work week, if it's by their choice or by the nature of their job, can find that they can have three consecutive days in a row. And that's great, not only for happiness, but for being efficient in the following week.
Mm-hmm. I'm just curious, like, if we take a real basic example, say the job is like bricklayer. You got to build a wall. At the end of the day, like, if you work longer, you probably built more wall. How can we think about that job in the context of the conversation we're having, Ashley?
Well, we also need to think not just about that one day, but the longevity of that worker across days. So they might build, if they work 10 hours in that one day, a lot of wall, but then they're going to come back the next day and be more tired and build less wall in more time. We've seen this during the pandemic. There's some great economics papers showing that because we're working longer hours, it actually it's taking us longer hours to get to the same amount of productive output in the virtual environment where we're all tired and because we're working longer hours. So I love the point that Lonnie's making that more work, we need to break this mentality part of the conversation. I think that's so important to be having right now around running 4-day work weeks or other kinds of time experiments in the US context is that we need to break this thinking that more work is more productivity. This goes back to ideal worker norms that are pervasive in North American and US cultural context, where we think that the person who is constantly responsive and working the longest hours is the most productive. But as Lonnie's mentioning, all of the best research points to the fact that if we work less, we actually have
coming up on a break here. We'll be right back. We're talking with Ashley Williams from Harvard Business School and Lonnie Golden from the Business and Economics Department at Penn State Abington. And we want to hear from you, especially if you're a worker or an employer. Call us 1-888-477-9499. Email radiotimes at whyy.org or Twitter at @WHYYRadioTimes.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Kevin McCrory in for Marty Moskowain. We're talking this hour about the idea of the four-day work week. Do we want that? Do we need that? Could it really happen? Joining us this hour, Lonnie Golden, a professor of business and economics at Penn State Abington. He specializes in worker well-being and flexibility in the workplace. And Ashley Williams, a professor of Harvard Business School who studies the intersection of time, money, happiness, and public policy. And we want to hear from you. We'd love to hear your input. 1-888-477-9499 is the number. Email radiotimes@whyy.org or on Twitter at WHYY Radio Times. And we got a few comments in so far on Facebook. You can hit us up there as well. Kate writes in, sign me up. 40 hours a week has always felt like an arbitrarily large percent of your life devoted to contributing to company profit. Another comment from Kathy on Facebook. She says, I worked a 4-day, 10.5-hour day work week for several years, and the days at work were long, but very worth it for the extra day off. Want to get back to our conversation with you, Lonnie and Ashley. It seems like the takeaway for some of this is that there's just a lot of wasted time baked into many of our current work arrangements. And we're kind of getting at that when we're discussing meetings and email culture. I know, Ashley, you're close with this New Zealand firm, Perpetual Guardian. Tell us more about what they did and how they shaved hours off their week.
Yeah, so I consult more broadly for that organization, so I don't know all of the details about some of the studies that they were implementing. But more broadly, this point is very well taken, that, you know, we organizations systematically waste employees' time. There's a great paper by one of my colleagues showing that idle time, like the time spent between meetings, adds up to hundreds of billions of dollars of lost productivity in the U.S. each and every year, just because employees don't have efficient, you know, use of or control over their time during the workday. So they end up idle in the middle of the workday. I think thinking about how to squish all of your work into 4 days does make us more efficient. So what in some of the case examples that we've been looking at as part of the 4-day work week initiative, employees have introduced things like 30-minute meetings to cover everything that had been previously that needed to be discussed during the week. But instead of just kind of tapping someone on the shoulder or bothering them in the inbox all throughout the week, we have devoted time in some of these organizations to actually have conversations about all of the things remaining instead of just consistently pinging people. So that's one very specific strategy that some of these organizations have tried. They've also done time blocking, so really putting deep work into your day so that where it's a norm that you're not going to be in communication with each other. That's also really important. So I think thinking about how we can do more with less time available also forces us to be more intentional and deliberate about what interactions we're having on an everyday basis with our colleagues. And as we were talking before the break, makes us more intentional about things like email communication and meetings, because we have to be. We have to get our whole job done in less amount of time. And so this forces an efficiency and forces conversation around efficiency that organizations should definitely be having.
Yeah, you know, one, I guess, detractor argument that I was reading was that, you know, trying to jam all of our work into a shorter amount of time kind of takes away maybe some of those softer interactions that happen in a workplace. I mean, that's kind of been a big conversation lately about the return to work. You know, we need to be back in the office so we can bump into each other at the coffee machine and spur up some amazing innovation together. Would that be lost in a move to make every minute, every hour of our time more efficient in a goal to essentially get paid the same for less hours?
I think if I could just pick up on this conversation, I mean, I do have some data suggesting that if we are in this hyper-efficiency mindset, that we do tend to spontaneously interact with our colleagues less. So I have some studies showing that people are more in a productivity or money orientation are more likely to be efficient as opposed to social interact. And in some of our pilot studies for the 4-day work week, employees would ask things like, well, what will happen to cake Fridays? Are we just going to take that off the table? And so I think as long as you have a process for thinking about how to facilitate interactions within a constrained amount of time, and you highlight the importance of these social interactions, they won't go missing. I think there is definitely the risk of these kinds of informal social interactions, which bring us so much joy and increase productivity at work, going missing. But again, I think if you're thinking about implementing a 4-day work week experiment in your organization, it's something that you actually need to build in and be intentional about.
Lonnie, want to bring you in on that point?
Yeah, one of the reasons this is being discussed right now is, as we went through the shutdowns, is that people understood the value of their social relationships, family relationships, and a lot of those social relationships are through work. So I don't think the proposal is to entirely eliminate that, but it would be to sort of limit that and to understand that part of the idea of if we're doing this compression, which without the 10-hour shifts per day, example for these, especially for these white collar workers, is to sort of squeeze out the excessive sort of virtue signaling and how else should we say it? The FaceTime, the presenteeism, and get right down to business, including the interactions that will be productive, and not without completely eliminating the non-productive ones. But understanding that there are relationships outside of work, then that might compensate for that. The more time with family, children, parents, friends, et cetera.
Yeah, just to, I guess, go on that a little farther, Lonnie, like the underpinning argument to this all kind of seems to be that, like, a lot of people are buried in work so much to the point that they're not having quality interactions with their loved ones enough, and that when you give people more time, they truly will become happier because of that. Is that really the prospect we're talking about here, Lonnie?
I think so. I think that the research that I've done with my colleague at Rutgers Camden shows that there's this norm of about 40, and if we change that norm, maybe people will reallocate their time a little bit. And the people that are the least happy, at least not controlling for anything, are people that work above the 40 because they can see that sacrifice. And the people who work considerably below that are also less happy. So we shouldn't lose sight of the people that would maybe pick up the extra work hours, particularly those people that are paid per hour, the so-called non-exempts, where they're, and polls show that they want to pick up additional hours because their incomes are insufficient or inadequate, or they fear that in the future it will be, or in the past it was. So they're trying to make up some ground with their income. So it would be a win-win if we could squeeze all the excessive hours out and have at the organizational or even individual level some focus on the work, so that they can enjoy that non-work time.
Yeah. Here's a question from Mike. He writes in, there are people who do outdoor or seasonal jobs that are impacted by weather, and that means the work week constantly fluctuates. What if their shift is canceled? Would they lose a day? We have to consider people who have erratic schedules. And I guess it kind of just gets into the idea that, like, the concept we're talking about here definitely seems like it would work better for some jobs than others. And you know, maybe the white collar worker would benefit more from something like this than immediately would maybe translate to other people. Ashley,
I mean, we have definitely. I think there's no one size fits all solution. I think you if you're going to try to implement a reduced work week schedule in an organization for different kinds of jobs, you're going to need to think, well, what are some of the unique problems or challenges that are going to come up in this context. So what we've seen, even in the context of shift work or more seasonal work in some of the case examples that we've been working on, is that you could potentially spread the work out across employees, right? So you're doing a staggered four-day work week. It's not everyone's getting the same day off, or not everyone is working the same hours, so that you can fill that additional demand wherever it might happen or if there's weather constraints. So I think this is just really underscoring the importance of taking this general principle and then running a pilot study in your own organization to really think, well, how is this going to work? So that you can talk through all of these really critical issues. I don't think it's necessarily that the four-day work week is going to only be able to work for white-collar jobs. I think it can work for all kinds of jobs, but the implementation will have to be a little bit more creative depending on the parameters of the job, seasonality, weather, contracting. But I definitely think it's possible and have seen examples where we can implement this with just some strategic thinking around some of these core issues that are going to come up, regardless of the kind of work you're doing.
Lonnie, I want to bring you in on that. I mean, if I'm just thinking about the, remote work era that happened during the pandemic, it seemed like the flexibility and the kind of benefits of that to some degree were experienced by much more by office workers compared to a lot of others who then either were losing their jobs or suffering because of COVID and putting themselves more at risk. Just what do you think about how this prospect looks at the different ends of the socioeconomic strata?
No, I think that's really crucial to argue that there's no one size fits all, because there's so much differentiation between different types of jobs or different types of people or people at different stages of their life cycle at work. So to Ashley's point, if organizations would ask people who wants to do a reduction, that would be a great first step rather than imposing it top down. Find people that would have a preference for that. So when we ask in polls, generally, we do find differences among type of jobs and particularly by income level of who wants to work less and who wants to work more. So I think that would be really important to have that view that sustainability is not just a reduction, but it also means an increase for those that are hungry for more hours in order to get more income. I mean, one of the reasons our hourly and the bricklaying people want to work overtime is because of the stagnation of their hourly pay, you know, and you get the time and a half. It's not that they just want to bricklay every day, all day long, right? So once we take into consideration, there's this, you know, great heterogeneity or stratification, whatever fancy word you want to use for it. Not all jobs are the same and not all people are the same. Or like with the outdoor work, not all times of year are the same. So what we want is more worker choice and more worker options on the menu. So at least as a first step, with a slightly lower standard, after which overtime would be owed, that workers can choose to reduce that. And there are some laws that try to provide that. There are at least proposals that people can request additional hours, and employers would have to seriously consider the application to supply them, or right to refuse the excessive hours, so that employers would have to start thinking through, let's beef up the staff a little bit so that we don't ask everybody to work all weekend long when the sun is out or when the orders come rushing in.
Got a comment in from Noelle. She writes, policies in the U.S. are archaic by international standards. We think more work equals more productivity. We give little or no family leave or sick days. And I think that taps into, you know, this international comparisons, like how valid are they? You know, the European culture is just much different than the American culture when it comes to work. And those points have been made over and over for decades. And is there something, Ashley, in just the American mindset that that prevents us from creeping in that direction?
Yeah, so this is what I, right before we went on break, I was talking a little bit about, is that the U.S. in particular has these strong cultural imperatives around the ideal worker being someone who's constantly available, putting work first, putting work above and beyond any other element of their life. Part of that has to be or is driven rather by the fact that we don't have the social security nets that other countries do. I'm Canadian, and you know, the idea that my healthcare and now my mortgage are tied up in my job, of course, that makes my work very central out of necessity, right? So there's kind of like weaker psychological contracts, if you will, between employers and employees in the US context. And so this creates organizations that perpetuate these ideal worker norms that make employees feel like they need to be constantly responsive, even if organizations are trying to have more of these work-life balance and more flexibility-related policies within the companies that they're running. Employees don't always take it seriously or sometimes still feel worried. So a lot of what we see in conversations initially around 4-day work week and reduced work week initiatives is employees feeling worried that if they actually advocate for working less, that they're going to be seen as a less committed worker. So really for the first part of the conversation around flexibility and implementation of flexible workplace policies, we've seen in our own data that when leaders model the importance of taking time off from work, when they celebrate achievements outside of work, when they share nice photos of vacations, when they are walking the talk that they want to instill in their employees, that this goes a long way in helping employees feel like they can actually take the time off that their organizations are hoping. So this is a really critical part of the conversation about implementing any reduced work week schedules in the United States in particular, is we have to really empower employees to take ownership, take control over their time, to feel good about taking their time off the clock and really enjoying leisure, so that they aren't in a 4-day work week scenario and then secretly spend all of that 5th day working just so that they can, again, engage in some FaceTime or try to look like the most committed person in the office. So I really do think changing mindsets around time will be a really important part, along with the social systematic policies, right, that are so important. that these two things really will have to work together. We need to change norms within organizations, and we need to make workers feel like their jobs are secure and offer more protection so that employees really do feel like they can take the additional time given.
Just want to give out our contact information again. If you're trying to reach us, we'd love to hear from you. 1-888-477-9499 is the number. Tweet us at WHYY Radio Times or email radiotimes@whyy.org. We'd love to hear, especially from an employer. How are you? How would this work? Are you thinking about this? Would you consider it? What would the practical implications be? Let us know. Give us a call. I do want to mention that there is federal legislation now that's been introduced on this that would reduce the standard work week from 40 hours to 32 hours, essentially by lowering the maximum hours threshold for overtime under the Fair Labor Standards Act. Hard to imagine that this federal legislation is going to go anywhere soon. And I guess I would just point out that in Pennsylvania, you know, there's been a political debate about raising the minimum wage from $7.25 an hour for more than a decade at this point. And just really hard for me to think that a government mandate forcing businesses to pay overtime after 32 hours really has any legs. But Lonnie, what do you think about this legislation?
Well, I think it's a pent up response to try to address some of those norms, whether it goes to 38 or 37.5 or 36 is less crucial than the discussion of should we perpetuate the 40-hour standard. And since we're looking not only at individual level, organizational level, let's look at that national level. And one of the sources that's systemic to our sort of long hours culture is the healthcare system that puts the burden on employers. And it'd be interesting to hear if an employer says, yeah, if I could be alleviated of that burden, I wouldn't have to work people overtime or hire part-time people that don't have benefits to shave my costs down. So sometimes we don't see the root of this, which is when there's healthcare expenses that are on every job, it creates an incentive for employers to lengthen the hours for both the hourly and salaried people. And then people adjust to that and say, well, if that's going to be the norm. It's sort of interesting in the current jobs report that while the people who want to work full-time in order, let's say, to get healthcare benefits, who currently work part-time is actually coming back down, like the unemployment rate.
Coming up on another break here. We'll jump back with Lonnie. We'll come back to you in a moment. We gotta go to a break, Lonnie.
That seems to be higher.
Call us at 1-888. We'll continue with you, Lonnie, in just a minute. We're coming back after this short break. Again, call us 1-888-477-9499 or on Twitter, WHYY Radio Times.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Kevin McCrory in for Marty Moskowain, talking this hour about the idea of the four-day work week. Is it possible? Could we get there? Is it realistic? And we've had two great guests. Lonnie Golden is the professor of business and economics at Penn State Abington, specializing in worker well-being and flexibility in the workplace. And Ashley Willens is the professor at Harvard Business School, who studies the intersection of time, money, happiness, and public policy. Lonnie, I cut you off at the end of there while we were going to the break. I'm sorry. Could you pick up your thought?
Not a problem. Remember, we're trying to squeeze down work. So I guess the point was we have some systemic issues which create incentives for both employers and for workers that want to work longer hours. And if we could address that at least gradually by taking the burden of health care off full-time employment, that might alleviate some of this pressure to, at the individual, organizational, and even national level to have that long work hours sort of standard.
Yeah, yeah. I want to look back a little bit more through history. Ashley, maybe you can help us unpack this to get a better understanding of this conversation. So what was life like for the average worker during the Industrial Revolution, and how did that change?
So I'll take my best crack at this question. I am a experimental social psychologist by training, not a historian. But, you know, what one thing I talk a lot about in the shift of even time poverty and the feeling of not having enough time is that we've become constantly responsive to our jobs. So during the Industrial Revolution, you know, we'd clock in, we'd clock out, we'd have very clear objectives and metrics that we were working toward, and productivity was much easier on average to measure, right? How many how many products did you make in a factory that day, or how many widgets did you produce, and, you know, in kind of more modern times. But as work has moved out of the factory and into more knowledge work settings, it becomes more difficult to have an understanding of what a productive day looks like. And we've used more technologically mediated devices to get our jobs done. And so this has created this always on constant work culture. And so that is part of the historical context that we find ourselves in now, is that productivity is really hard to define. So we might define it more through constant responsivity, as we've been talking about. And we are able to be constantly connected to our jobs, and as a function of that, are constantly connected. This is known in the organizational behavior literature as the autonomy paradox. Technology was supposed to free us from the office, and now we take our offices everywhere we go. So with some of these shifts around what the workday looks like and how we get our work done, we end up working a lot longer hours when we could actually be working shorter hours.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about, you know, there was this push from, you know, really unions in the early part of the 20th century to beat back essentially the 6-day work week. One, it seems like, you know, tipping point was actually Henry Ford reducing shifts in auto plants in 1914 to 8 hours a day without cutting worker pay 5 days a week. He saw a boom in output, and it seemed like that was part of what spurred the idea to pick up. But let me read this quote from the chairman of the board from the Philadelphia Gear Works shortly after Henry Ford rolled out the policy of 5 days a week, 40 hours. Any man demanding a 40-hour work week should be ashamed to claim citizenship in this great country. The men of our country are becoming a race of softies and mollycoddles. So what does this tell us about this overall debate that we're having and kind of how times change? Put that to you, Lonnie.
Well, that's true, that there's always a bit of badge of honor to working a long day or working a long week to contribute to your company, to contribute to your own self-esteem and identity by working longer, which I think speaks to why we need to have a reconsideration of what that norm is. Because if you don't have a norm, particularly in these open-ended white-collar jobs, if you don't have a standard that says this is enough, you'll have everybody racing in a rat race type of environment to try to exceed it. So so I don't think there's anything wrong with saying that work is good for the company, work's good for your soul, or accumulating more income. There's a lot of opportunities that we didn't have in the 1930s when we first had this discussion. I don't think John Maynard Keynes, who argued that we could eventually work 3 hours a day and get our current level of output when his grandchildren would exist, which would be about now, I don't think they imagined back then that you could actually want to have three Fords, right? Not just one, or three houses or cell phones, or everybody would want to go to college and grad school or be able to afford that. Or, you know, so the culture has changed. And I don't want to say that everybody should just work less, but what we're trying to point out is there's cost to working a little too much, and we ought to reconsider resetting that norm.
Yeah, I want to go into that a little bit more with you, Ashley. You know, there were these predictions for decades. I mean, like Keynes, like you mentioned, but even Richard Nixon as vice president said he expected a 4-day work week soon, and he said that in the 1950s. Just curious why you think it just hasn't come to fruition, or the idea really hasn't picked up steam until it seems like it's picking up more steam now.
Yeah, and I think just to piggyback on what Lonnie is saying, I think, you know, this has been a moment where we've been able to press pause and fundamentally alter the way that we've been living and working. Obviously, it was a forced experiment. If you ask some of the management consultants I've been working with over the last year trying to understand the nature of virtual work, if they would have ever worked remotely and not traveled 4 days a week, they would have said, you're crazy. Like, we're never going to be part of that experiment. But because we've been taking such drastic actions in our own lives around the way we get work done, this has led us to really question, do we need to go back to the way things were? And I think we did end up at this point, and we have ended up at this point of, instead of using technology to get us out of work, using technology to work all the time because of these norms that we have around the person who works most is the best worker, but also because our labor force is really competitive. And so there is some real stress and constraints, especially as Lonnie was mentioning, as our culture has evolved and as what people want has changed, and our wants have really increased and magnified in terms of our houses and our wages really haven't kept up to inflation, that there is this kind of need, or at least we feel like there's a need to work a lot of hours in order to maintain the jobs we have, to have the lifestyles we want, and which have become increasingly expensive. So I think there's no wonder that over the last year, as people have started to really reflect, like, do we need to work all these hours? And is there a way that workplaces can help employees be more efficient with the time they have available and start really going back and asking this question of, can we work to output as opposed to hours? And is there a way that we can actually start to ask this question and really engage in these kinds of conversations in the workplace where hours isn't the key outcome, but quality of work is?
Yeah, we have a caller on the line, Graham, who is the owner of a company in Plymouth Meeting who gives employees 4-day work weeks. Graham, tell us, how does it work for you? What benefit do you see?
Yeah, good morning. Several benefits, actually. We became a 4-day work week in April 2019. A couple of things that we noticed. We tested it first in 2018 through a couple of different periods of the year, and we found that productivity went up. We were actually getting more done in 4 days than we were in 5 days. I think some of that was the incentive, knowing that Friday was going to be a free day. So that was quite surprising. But it really started out as a mental health issue for my employees. We're a digital marketing agency for the electronics industry. And I just saw people burning out. So it started out as a mental health issue. But over the last 2 years, it's now become an employee retention issue. Hmm. You know, digital marketing is a very competitive space. And what we found is employees don't want to leave Lectrix because there aren't other digital marketing agencies out there, or not many of them, that are actually offering the same thing. As a big difference between working 4 days and 5 days. Any, so that's been our experience. And
any drawbacks you would point to, or warning signs if another employer was thinking about going this direction?
Well, I think, as your guest said a few minutes ago, I think the challenge is more on the employer side than on the employee side. And it just requires a change of mindset, a change of thinking. You know, a good way, you know, I think it's a good idea to test it first before you go and do the whole thing. But no, I mean, there are times when, you know, we do have to put in some work on Fridays, but I'm not working today. And it's just become a very healthy mental state, I think, for the company. And what I try to reinforce with my employees, I say, Friday is my day. It's not for your wife, spouse, husband, other, or kids and chores. I want them to do something for themselves, something positive, whether it's working out, going for a walk or a bike ride, but do something for themselves on Friday. And what we found is that people came back to work much more creative, much more productive on a Monday.
Hmm. Well, really appreciate you calling in, Graham. I appreciate your comment. Lonnie, you want to chime in on what Graham talked about?
Well, I think that's the perfect situation of where you get these potential benefits. And it is kind of surprising why others would be so resistant to it. But when you have model employers like that trying it out and generating some evidence that the worst fears don't occur, then maybe we can get there, at least, you know, company by company. And then the question then becomes, should we do this for all? And does the company get the benefit if everybody else is doing it? But it does reverse that mindset that if we work longer than other companies, you know, we'll get more profits, we'll get more contracts, we'll get more work done. And I think that it's really important to understand your own employees or the mix of jobs you have, where those returns to additional hours begin to diminish and they're not worth the additional expense.
Got a comment in from Frank. He says, I'm a nationwide employer and a top priority is retaining our employees. I will do whatever it takes to keep people. We start paid $18 an hour and take a ton of time to train them. So really just, again, going to the, you know, kind of the cost benefit of retention and how important that is, and you know, is essentially lowering the work week away to do that. Seemed to work for Graham and seemed to work for some others that you guys have been working with. So very interesting. I do have a question. This is a little bit of a curveball, but like, where do schools fall in this conversation? If we truly were to go to 4 days, or if we were to limit hours, does the school week change? How does that affect kind of the family dynamic? Ashley, I'll put that to you.
Yeah, I think this is a really interesting question. And I mean, we've been seeing during the COVID-19 pandemic how difficult, you know, flexible work and like the intersection of flexibility and childcare can be. So I think employers might have to start thinking about if they really want, as Graham was mentioning, the Friday, the fifth day to be the me day for employees, really maximize the well-being benefit, how they might be able to support working parents who will have that fifth day and maybe need to be thinking about childcare during that day or school or other things. But I think if we get to a place in society in the U.S. where we're worried about needing to shift the school schedule around our shifting work schedule, that we're in a good place. If so many companies adopt this, that we need to be reimagining what school looks like for our kids or what university schedules look like, then I think that that critical cultural imperative that we're talking about has occurred. So I look forward to the day when the conversation starts moving more in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a body of experts and researchers who were looking into the same conversation we're having about work, about school, and what the pandemic kind of revealed about efficiencies and inefficiencies and connectivity. And certainly, I just, yeah, curious, Lonnie, like, what do you think about how school should pivot in the context of this conversation?
Well, again, there probably shouldn't be a one-size-fits-all, but we're still trying to get school districts into the 20th century from, right, with the summers all off because of harvesting and starting at, you know, sunrise. I mean, we're trying to get them coordinated with modern workplaces, modern jobs, and evidence that the first few hours of a kid's day in high school, their brains are not yet turned on. So, yes, I think we should move the conversation in that direction. If you talk with people in education, if they went to a four-day work week or a half day on Friday or whatever single day of the week, however it gets staggered, I think that would be a major advance. So we have not yet coordinated schooling with changes in the workplace, so it would be great to rethink that as well.
Ashley, coming up here on the end of the hour, but if you have any one last thing to kind of say about how employers could you know, approach this, what would it be?
Yeah, I think I just want to underscore something that I think it was Graham, the guest, said, that you really would just want to start somewhere. Like, try running a small pilot. Try having some of these conversations in your workplace. Bring it up. Start a task force committee and try to make a small change to reduce work hours. I think just starting the conversation, not trying to troubleshoot all of the potential issues in advance, can go a long way for making people more open-minded and starting to change the culture within an organization so that hours off are celebrated and that we can begin to move the needle on changing the way that work fits into our lives so that we have more focus on life and less focus on work, and that becomes something that's normal to talk about. So I really encourage anyone listening to at least try to start these conversations before we go back to the way things were while we're still in this period of transition.
And Lonnie, last word from you?
I would say, echoing that, not only the personal or organizational level, but let's have a national discussion about what the work week should be and how it should be spread. If we're going to 4 or 4.5 days or whatever number of hours we find maximizes our well-being.
All right.
It doesn't hurt employers.
So that's going to be it for today's show. Radio Times is produced by WHYY in Philadelphia by Debbie Builder and Paige Mary Bessler. Our engineer today was Al Banks. I'm Kevin McCrory in for Marty Moskowitz.